You've reached the Every Little Thing helpline. Please pass the Tums after the beep.
Hi, my name is Max, and earlier today I ate some fish, and after eating said fish, my dad informed me that fish had been frozen all the way back in 2016, 4 years ago. So I just needed to know, is it really okay to eat food that's been frozen that long? Thanks so much.
Hello?
Hey, Max, it's Flora from ELT.
Hi.
So it seems like you survived the four-year-old fish.
I sure did.
You lived to tell the tale.
The fish tale.
Was the fish an isolated incident?
I would say that this sort of thing happens quite frequently. Like, my dad freezes things from Thanksgiving, and then we eat it a year later or something crazy like that. And I guess that's the other thing, too, is that he doesn't date anything in the freezer. It's just kind of ambiguous meat that he'll just keep in there until he decides the time is right.
Well, how does he decide the time is right? Like, is he working methodically through all of his 2016 items right now?
Who knows? I have to wonder, too, if certain things just get lost in the freezer for a long time, and then it's just kind of like happy coincidence when you find it again or something.
Like a $5 bill under the couch cushion or something?
Yeah.
What's your track record with foodborne illness? Have you ever had food poisoning?
Yeah. I can solidly say that every single time I've been to I've come home sick. But
we're going to have to bleep the name of that. So we don't get sued. It rhymes with Billy's.
After the third time in a row, I stopped going there because I swore it out of my life.
I can't believe you went back two other times after the first incident.
I know. I can't believe either. And I sure let my girlfriend sweet talk me into doing it a third time.
I hope you draw the line.
I have drawn the line.
For your sake, please stop.
Yeah, no more Billy's for me.
All right, walk me through the fish incident that prompted this call.
Okay, so about 5 or 6 months ago, my dad cooked dinner for us. I'm not too big of a seafood person myself, but if something's fried, it's tolerable. So we fried the fish, and then afterwards I ate it. And he goes, "Hey, how did it taste?" And I said, "It was all right. Why?" And he's like, "Oh, did you know that this fish is over 4 years old from 2016? And it made me wonder, what is the actual longest period of time that food can be frozen and safely consumed?
Is four-year-old fish safe to eat?
Is it safe? Yes. And I guess I would also extend to, like, refreezing foods. My dad has a habit of, like, freezing leftovers and stuff and then pulling them out at a later date.
Okay, let's start with the fish.
Okay.
We landed someone with just the right expertise to answer your question.
Ooh.
I'm a food safety expert, and my research lab studies foodborne pathogens.
That's Haley Oliver.
Hi, Max.
Hi, Haley.
So you wanted to know, is that four-year-old fish going to make you seasick? Is that fish going to send you to Brown Town?
Lay it on me. Filet it on me.
As long as the fish remained frozen, so it wasn't thawed out, left on the counter, it's not going to be unsafe. So, Max, from a safety standpoint, Dad wins.
No.
If it stays frozen, you're golden. Not holding it in at a staff meeting where your coworkers are wondering why you're sweating and peaked. And here's why.
The process of freezing is designed to stop the growth of microorganisms. That's why freezing works. So from a safety standpoint, it's good for the long game.
Like 100 years, that fish, Max could still eat that fish.
I suppose, but show me a refrigerator or freezer that can last that long and you're going to make a fortune.
As long as you cook it after you defrost it, it's good basically forever in that freezer.
Oh, God. I feel like I'm still not going to keep fish that's like for 4 years, though.
Well, you're not wrong, because there is a catch of the day.
Oh?
Where the fish scale tips back towards you in this debate.
Good.
This becomes the difference between quality versus safety. It's not going to be unsafe. It's just that the quality will have reduced over time, and it may have a really what I would consider an unpleasant texture, maybe more oxidized or freezer burn tasting.
It's just not going to taste any good if you leave it in there for 4 years.
Maybe I was already biased since I'm not crazy about seafood.
Could be.
All right, but like, what about the refreezing thing? If you pulled something out of the freezer, heated it up, ate it, and then decided to refreeze it, does that change the safety of the food?
Now we're getting into some interesting territory. We're getting into some gray zone now.
Actually, we're getting into the brown zone.
I don't want to go into brown town.
If you put the food right back in the fridge or the freezer after you defrost it, you're good. But
if it sits around for a meal or two and then finds its way to the freezer and wasn't refrigerated in between, then we might be running into some questions. Not a guarantee, but certainly getting a little more dicey.
Like, it has to really sit out before being put in the freezer for it to be questionable?
Yes. Leave the food out for more than 2 hours, you're at risk for bottom showers. What was that sigh?
You know what you did.
There is one more thing you should know.
Oh?
Before you go blaming the fish or Billy's.
Sorry, I forgot about that. Okay.
We heard from Haley that it's actually really hard to trace what caused your rump eruption, your back end blowout.
You have actually no idea what caused it.
Really?
Yeah, because of how many things you've eaten, your health, there are so many factors. It just super makes me laugh when people are like, oh, it was, you know, fast food X. Was it, or was it that you screwed up the cutting board situation in your kitchen 3 days ago? Because that can be the onset time for things like salmonella. If it just always seems to be you, maybe you need to look at your kitchen.
Maybe it's not Billy's. Maybe it's you, Max.
I don't know about that. Have I really just, like, screwed myself over 3 days prior to every single time that I've decided to be dragged along to Billy's? Is that just what it happened every time? I'm not the expert, but I know that Billy's does not sit with me.
Maybe it's time for Smapplebee's.
Taco smell.
Pizza smut?
Pizza smut.
Olive Garden?
Dead lobster.
Little sneezers. After the break, a look at some of the best eyeballs in the animal kingdom.
What? Wait. Go. So those two eyes are kind of essentially like telescopes.
Hi, this is Miles from Ashland, Oregon. The other day, I noticed a tiny spider on the dashboard of my car, and it got me thinking, what's the smallest thing it can see? Can it see things that I can't, like microscopic bacteria? Okay, thanks. Bye.
Hello?
Hey, Miles, it's Flora from ELT.
Hi, Flora.
So how into spiders are you?
Not really.
Not an avid spider spyer.
No, I don't have arachnophobia or anything like that. I just don't like big spiders. Like, when I hear a spider can eat a bird, not a fan.
Mm-hmm.
But a cute Pixar-type animation of a little spider, I love that. Really itsy-bitsy ones.
Itsy-bitsy spiders you're good with. That went up the water spout, you're fine with those.
Yes, the song, great.
Okay, tell me about your car encounter.
So I was sitting in my car and I just saw a little spider on the dashboard. It was small enough that I'm like, okay, let's nudge you along and get out of my car.
The message was, I want you out.
Yeah, I appreciate you. I appreciate all you do, but get out.
Uh-huh. What did it look like? What kind of spider do you think it was?
It looked like one of those little jumping spiders that like skitter around. They're really quick.
The cute ones.
Yeah, it's a cute one. Yeah. And it just got me thinking, I'm seeing this spider and it's so small. So what does it see? Like bacteria, little creatures, you know, things that I can't see. What can it see?
Could that spider on your dashboard that was looking up at you see the bacteria clinging to your nose hairs?
Yeah, if we could put ourselves in one of their bodies, like what would that world look like? Is it just a whole other level of a crazy new world?
That is a great question, Miles, and it's definitely something that I've spent a long time thinking about. What do animals that are that small actually see? What is their world like when they're exploring things?
That's Sebastian Echeverry, and he is here to answer your question.
Hi, Miles. How's it going?
Hi, Sebastian.
And jumping spider eyesight is his specialty.
Oh, that is my alley. That is my wheelhouse. That is my PhD.
He got a PhD in this?
In jumping spider vision. Specifically, how jumping spiders get each other's attention.
That's amazing. Wow.
Miles, he lives and breathes spiders. Let me send you a picture of his room, like the one in his home.
Okay. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, not counting Sebastian's too, there are 160 legs in that room.
I have two trapdoor spider enclosures, and then I have a shelf that's like three shelves high. With all my tarantulas. And there's a few jumping spiders in there, but they're mostly tarantulas. They're part of the family.
Mostly tarantulas. Like, what would you call the opposite of an arachnophobic?
He's an arachnophile.
Okay, all right. Yeah, definitely an arachnophile.
Okay, so let's get to your encounter. It happened in Oregon, right?
Yeah.
And you thought it was a jumping spider.
Mm-hmm.
Sebastian confirmed. He said it's totally possible that's what you saw.
Oh, yeah. Jumping spiders are the most diverse group of spiders. There's about 10,000 species of them across the world. And there are many of them throughout the United States. In fact, there is a species within the genus that I study, the paradise jumping spiders, called Habronatus oregonensis, Oregon's paradise jumping spider.
Whoa.
So let's say this is the little guy that you locked eyes with on your dashboard. You wanted to know if that spider might have peeped your microbiome. And the answer is no.
Nah.
Those microscopic mites and bacteria are so much smaller than we have a sense of that even for a jumping spider, these things are vanishingly tiny.
Vanishingly tiny.
Let me put it in perspective. If we're talking body length, a jumping spider is about 200 times smaller than you, but bacteria is still thousands of times smaller than a jumping spider.
Mm.
You know, a jumping spider is closer to our size than it is to the size of a bacteria.
Gotcha. Okay.
They'd basically need, just like us, super duper magnifying lenses to see any of that stuff.
Which would be really cool. It'd be kind of cute.
Oh, yeah. It would be adorable. But jumping spiders, sadly, do not have magnifying lenses yet.
So I guess then the next question is, like, what does their world look like?
I'm really glad you asked, because jumping spiders happen to have some of the most amazing eyeballs in the animal kingdom.
No way, really?
Yeah, their eyes can do tons of cool stuff that ours can't.
They have some of the weirdest, most impressive eyes that I have seen in a very long time.
I want to know more.
Okay, so let's take the paradise jumping spider, the Oregon paradise jumping spider. I want to send you a magnified picture of it.
Yes, please.
So you can see what it looks like up close, and we'll put it on Instagram at ELT Show.
All right, all right. It's really cute, actually. It looks like it has a furry little mustache, and it definitely goes to the gym.
Yeah, they look really cool. They have these like big, beefy front arms the males use in their courtship dance.
It's bulked up. It focuses mostly on its arms, which I don't think is the best, you know.
Get some leg days in.
Yeah, yeah, some leg days would be kind of important.
How many eyes do you see?
Okay, I see. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. six total.
There are actually two more. They have four in the front, two on either side, and two in the back.
Whoa.
So their eyes literally go around their head.
It's like a crown of eyes.
Crown of eyes is an excellent term for it.
Wow. Crown of eyes. So like a 360 view, essentially?
Precisely. Okay, so the two crown jewels are the big ones in front. They almost look like puppy dog eyes, right?
Oh, yeah. If it just had like two eyes, that would be, it would be really sweet.
If it just had like this two enormous eyes in the front.
Maybe some bushy eyebrows, too.
An eyebrow ring. Okay, so in the Oregon Paradise Jumping Spider, those eyes can see green, red, and they can also see UV light, which means that when they peruse their environment, they're seeing all this crazy stuff that we don't.
There are many hidden patterns in nature that only show up if you can see ultraviolet colors. So patterns on like flowers, on animals, they actually have like a pattern within there that humans can't detect.
But here's the thing that really sets these peepers apart.
The primary eyes are these long tubes that extend almost like the length of the head. They have the exterior lens, which is part of their exoskeleton, and then an interior lens, which actually expands the image back up, just like a telescope would.
Wait. So those two eyes are kind of essentially like telescopes.
Yeah, like telescopes inside their head. There's actually this amazing video where you can see the telescope eyes because the spider's head is translucent. I'm going to send it.
Okay. All right, it's loading. Oh, wow. Oh, that is gnarly. Look the way it moves.
Can you see the telescopes?
Yeah, just essentially like two cones that are bobbing around in the body and like the main body of the spider. And I guess wherever it's looking, those cones are moving.
And they can move independently, but when they get really interested, they will snap both onto the same target and track it.
So they can see how far then?
So, I mean, they can spot you from the jumping spider equivalent of 100 yards away, and they can sneak up on you, keep you in sight, and pounce, you know. And if you're another spider or like a cricket or something that doesn't have great vision, the spider can be on top of you before you even notice.
The effect is that they can see details that other spiders can't, and they can home in on things that are far away.
So their eyes can essentially zoom like a camera.
It's more like they can size images up using the two lenses in their eyeball tubes.
Wow. Okay. That's incredible.
So those two big eyes are the showpieces of their eyeball tiara. But let's talk about the eyes right next door to those crown jewels and the eyes on the back of their head. So these four eyes are kind of like a motion detector system. And it's really sophisticated. If so much as a blade of grass quivers beside them, these eyes send up a flare.
The side eyes will send signals to the spider's legs and the primary eyes and will say, hey, object over there, it's approximately shaped like this. You should go look at it. And the spider will swivel its whole body and move the primary eyes to focus on this object of interest.
Is there any way to relate, like, in comparing to human eyes, what would that be like?
Yeah, so not only can they make out these micro movements, they can also make out motion that we would see as a blur.
Jumping spiders can see, and many other invertebrate animals can see at a higher frame rate. They can detect smaller changes in time than we can.
Whoa, okay.
And here's an example. So our movies run at 24 frames per second because to our eyes, 24 frames looks like smooth, continuous motion. Mm-hmm. But for a jumping spider, a human movie would be like a slideshow.
A really boring PowerPoint presentation.
Exactly.
So things that look like continuous to us are actually jittery or stuttering to the spider.
And this helps them a lot in the wild.
Let me put it this way. It is incredibly difficult to sneak up on a jumping spider. From someone who has spent hundreds of hours trying to catch jumping spiders, if you don't go incredibly slowly, they will notice that you're there and just sprint away.
Yeah, I always wonder because every time, you know, you reach to brush off a spider, it's like it's already anticipated my movement before I even began.
Yes, because you're moving really slow to a spider, even when you're moving very, very fast.
That is so cool.
What do you think, Miles? Would you trade your eyes for jumping spider eyes?
I think it'd be amazing to just like spend one day to see what that would be like.
Would you do it?
If I'm not at risk of getting, you know, eaten by a larger predator, for sure.
If you wouldn't get like smushed by you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, in a way, after hearing what spiders can see, it feels like you were probably the least dynamic thing that spiders saw all day.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have any cool UV patterns. You're moving like a giant, slow-moving blob, you know?
The least interesting thing in its life. It's like, oh, you're so slow. If it could pat me on the head, it would.
Just a note before we go, in the original version of this episode, we made an error about the types of light jumping spiders can see. So here's the deal. All the jumping spiders that have been studied are able to see UV and green light. And some species, including the Oregon paradise jumping spider, can see red as well. We've corrected the error in this version of the show.
Every Little Thing is produced by Stephanie Werner, Emily Foreman, Phoebe Flanagan, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman, with help from Nicole Pasulka and Doug Barron. Our consulting editors are Caitlin Kenny and Jorge Just, scored and mixed by Dara Hirsch. Every Little Thing is a Spotify original podcast. Meet me at Billy's. Goodbye.